know how to deal with life ups and downs. The ups and downs are good. Hashem created the world that one time we're up and one time we're down. The easiest way to understand what Hashem wants from us is just to look at this world and you understand what Hashem wants from us. So if you want to see if a person is alive, then you hook him up to a monitor and then the monitor will start beeping and it will go up and down, up and down. Then you know the person is alive. And if the beeping goes faster, then he's a little bit more excited. Beeping goes a little bit lower, he's less excited. And if chas v'shalom, the line is flat, then he's not alive anymore. So if your life is flat, then the person is dead spiritually. And if the person's life is going up and down and up and down, then the person is alive. And in order to go one bump up, you have to go one bump down. That's the rhythm of this world. There's one time you're up, one time you're down. This world is like a Ferris wheel. One time you're up, and you have a beautiful view, and then you go down, and you're on the bottom, and then you have to wait to be up again. So life's ups and downs are actually part of the course of life, and it's actually a good thing. To reach to a level that you understand that the down is good, you first of all have to understand where it comes from. Because when you understand the problem, it's easier to find the solution. If you don't understand the problem, you can't find a solution. So it all starts, like everything, 5,776 years ago. Hashem creates the world, and He puts a man and a woman in a beautiful garden. But even if you go much more before that, there's a great question, why did God create the world? Why do we need this headache? So the Zohar explains that before the world was created, Hashem was just by Himself. Just Him. And then Hashem had the urge to be a king. So you can't be a king without a nation. En melech b'lo'am. So He had to create a nation. So He created us. He created the Jewish souls. And for whatever period of time, the souls were surrounding God. When I'm saying a period of time, because there's no time in the spiritual world, so we don't know, we don't have an evaluation in our perspective. But for a certain period of time, the souls were surrounding God. God was shining His endless light on these souls. They were deriving unbelievable pleasure from just seeing this godly revelation. And everything was good. And at some point, these souls, the souls of the Jews, they felt very bad. That Hashem just gives them and gives them and gives them. And they're just on the receiving end. So they started feeling very, very bad. So they told Hashem, listen, we feel very bad that we're just getting and we're not giving anything. We want to give you something. The Zohar calls it Nehama Deksufa, bread of shame. Like a poor person that knocks on your door every day and you give him his food and he's all embarrassed and he takes it but he has to take it. So the souls were embarrassed. They wanted to do something. So they said to God, we want to do something for you. So He says, no problem. I'm going to create a world and I'm going to put you in this world in bodies. I'm going to give you a lot of mitzvahs to do and you're going to earn your reward. You're going to earn what I'm actually giving you. So instead of getting it for free, you're going to earn it. And the more you're going to earn, the more you're going to get. Fair? And then He created the world. But it was 1 minute too late, and the souls were like, no, we were joking. We weren't really, are you taking us serious? But it was too late. The world was created. And Hashem created the world for us to serve Him, and then we get a reward. That's what it says, is when Hashem put Adam HaRishon in Garden of Eden, in Gan Eden, Le'ovda, Ve'leshomra, you're going to work there, and then you're going to guard it. So Hashem gave us Le'ovda to do 248 positive mitzvot, Ve'leshomra, and to guard it, the 365 negative mitzvot. So right from when Hashem created the world, He gave the instructions. You're going to come to this world to work, and you're going to earn it. Now the original plan was that Adam HaRishon was only supposed to keep one Shabbat, and that's it. That was the whole story was supposed to be 1 week. Not 7,000 years. 1 week was supposed to be 6 days of creation, then 1 day of Shabbos, and that's it. For Hashem to create the world, He had to create the world with different powers. He tried all sorts of other options, it didn't work. And then He found the formula how to create the world. Because first He wanted to create the world with the attribute of judgment. But the world did not sustain. It couldn't keep. It's too much judgment. So He said, okay, I have to create the world with chesed, with kindness. It also didn't work well. So He found the way that He creates the world with kindness, but wraps it around with severity, with judgment. So the way Hashem had to create the world is with two types of powers. A good power and a bad power. Zeh l'umat zeh bara Elokim. So Hashem created the holy powers, and then right away on the l'umat zeh, the other side of it is the unholy powers. The unholy power comes to conceal the godliness. Because the whole point of the world is Hashem did not want to be revealed. That's why the word in Hebrew, world, is olam. Olam comes from the word he'elem, something that you can't see. The words in Hebrew are not invented by somebody, it's because they have a meaning behind them. So the whole point of the world, how am I going to get a reward? If I'm going to see God in front of me, what's the challenge? What's going to be the challenge if I see God in front of me and He's going to tell me to do something? Of course I'm going to do it. So since Hashem wanted us to get a reward, so there has to be a challenge. So in order to be a challenge, He had to hide Himself. So He concealed Himself with some type of energy. This energy is called klipa. Like a klipa is a shell that surrounds the fruit. So klipa, in the spiritual term, is something that is hiding something inside. So the core of the world is spiritual and it's holy. And it, in order for it to be concealed, Hashem had to create something that is called tzimtzum. Tzimtzum is a contraction. He had to make the light disappear. He had to contract Himself, to hide Himself. So He covered this godly power with another type of godly power to hide it. Now this negative godly power that had to hide it came in the story that we read in the Torah. All the stories actually happened. If the Torah tells us a story, it actually literally happened. It's not a fiction. People think it's like a parables. If the Torah tells us something happened, it really happened. So in the Torah we learn that first of all there was Adam HaRishon. Then he had a wife. And then came the third guy, the snake. So everything that comes down to this world in a physical form, it manifests from a spiritual form. So Adam HaRishon is a manifestation of God. Betzelem Elokim Nivra Adam. Hashem took a shape and He created man out of it. Since Hashem created everything with the other half, and Adam HaRishon, when he was created, he was sitting, and Hashem brought to him everything in creation. And then Adam HaRishon named it. He brought all the animals, all the trees, everything. Adam HaRishon looked at it. Adam HaRishon, you have to understand, is not a person like us. It's an unbelievable high level of a godly soul. Adam HaRishon was so huge, the Gemara says that his feet were on the ground in this world, but he was 500 amot high. His head was in the supreme world. Because Gan Eden, heaven, is not necessarily the Gan down here. It's a state of mind. The Zohar says that Adam HaRishon was a pillar of light. It wasn't like how we think, like a man walking around naked in a garden, a tropical garden. So when Hashem created the world, first He created everything, and last one was Adam HaRishon. And Adam HaRishon sat there and he named everything, because he saw the godly power that enlivens everything in this world. So Hashem brought a line in front of him, he looked at it, he saw the letters that Hashem used as a combination to create it, and Adam HaRishon says, oh, this is Aryeh, and this is Kelev, and this is an Etz, and whatever. Adam HaRishon named everything. Because he saw the godly power that actually creates it. But then we know the whole story, that all the animals came with mates, And the only one who didn't have a mate was Adam HaRishon. And he got very upset. He's like, how come I don't have one? That's when Hashem says, okay. Lo tov al Adam liot levado. He shouldn't be by himself. Ani evra lo ezer kenegdo. I'll create for him a helpmate. So he put him to sleep and then he created Chava. And since then, started all the problems. Then comes this little spaghetti. Now people think that the nachash, that the snake, is bemet a little spaghetti walking in the garden. The truth was that nobody was allowed in the garden but Adam and Chava. The snake, he's the manifestation of the Yetzer Hara, of this evil force that came to oppose the Kedusha. And he wanted in the garden, to go into the garden. So he was calling Chava from the outside. Now he didn't just call her name, he was singing her love songs. He was standing outside of the garden. La-da-da-da. He wanted to come out, for 1 second. And he told her, let me in. She's like, no, you're not allowed in. He's like, come on, just let me look for 1 second, I just want to see how it looks. And he tricked her to go into the garden. And then we know the whole story, he pushed her on the tree, etc., etc. They didn't eat apples there, like what most people think. But they did the first sin. And the second that Adam HaRishon and Chava ate from the tree of knowledge, they brought down sin to the world, the concept of a sin. And right away the reaction was that they fell from their level. It says that Adam HaRishon nafal mimadrigato. He was in a certain level, then he went down in that level. And then we know the whole story. Adam got cursed, Chava got cursed, the snake got cursed, the land got cursed, everybody got their curse. And then they had to leave the garden because Hashem says if he's going to eat from the tree of life, then I don't care that he's going to live for life. But sin and death will be eternal. So he didn't want the concept of evil to be eternal, so he had to move them out of the garden. That's the only reason why they were pushed out. And then we know the whole story. They got their bodies. Adam HaRishon and Chava, they got bodies. And then they had to start fixing it. Since then till today, we have to fix the damage that Adam and Chava did. Because Adam and Chava were in such a certain level, and when Adam sinned and he went down from his level, Kabbalah explains that what happens, that his limb fell down. His limbs, they fell down. This is called Neshirat Evarim. All his limbs fell. There's another concept taught in Kabbalah that his godly light exploded. Shvirat HaKelim. His vessel got damaged. It couldn't sustain the godly light that he had and it exploded. And this godly light that exploded in 600,000 pieces. 600,000 sparks that correspond to the 600,000 souls of the nations of the Jews. Now the explosion happened in two parts. The head of Adam HaRishon, these are the souls of the Jews. And how do we know it? Because we are called Bnei Israel, the sons of Israel. If you switch the letters around, it's Li Rosh. Rosh is a head. So we know all the souls of the Jews came from the head of Adam HaRishon. All the souls of the nations, they came from Adam HaRishon's body. And how do we know that? How do we call the non-Jews? We call them goyim. A body in Hebrew is called gviya. So all the goyim, they came, it's not a bad word, it's just how we call it. They came from the body of Adam HaRishon. So we are from the head of Adam HaRishon, and the nations are from the body of Adam HaRishon. This godly light exploded all over the universe. Some sparks went all the way down to the lowest place in the universe. Some sparks, they didn't go so far away. And up until today, we have to correct the damage and put all the sparks back together. This is the secret of the tree of knowledge. Sod Etz Hadaat. Because Etz Hadaat, the tree of knowledge, is called Tov V'ra. Good and bad. So since that day, all our job in this world is to sift between the good and the bad. If you're looking at all our Torah, it's constantly sifting between good and bad. This is permitted, this is not permitted. This is kosher, this is not kosher. This is pure, this is impure. Our entire avodah is constantly sifting between good and bad. Because these godly sparks, they got trapped in a negative force called klipa, and these godly sparks are hidden and they're concealed, they're trapped. So we have to come down to this world now and start taking out these godly sparks out of their prison, out of the klipa. That's what we came to do this in this world. We are the commando of the Kadosh Baruch Hu that were sent behind enemy lines to come and start extracting these godly sparks. This is called Avodat HaBirurim, the job of sifting. Once we're done with that, we're ready for Mashiach to come. So we already finished Avodat HaBirurim. Now we're ready for Mashiach to come. We got all the sparks together. We found it. Now, the way to fix all that, first of all, we did a damage. You take now a hammer and you smash the wall. You have a hole in the wall. Now you have to fix it. You have to close it. You have to seal it and put plaster and paint it. And so we did a certain damage. Now we had to come and fix it. So each one of the participants that did a damage had to fix it. So Adam HaRishon has to fix certain things and Chava has to fix certain things. So the mitzvot and the certain acts that Adam has to do, that a man has to do, fixing the sin that Adam did. And what Chava damaged, and the woman has to fix what Chava did. The 10 curses that Chava got are the 10 things, main things that a woman has to fix. One of them is Be'etzev Til Dibanim. With a lot of sorrow, you're going to give birth. One of them is the 9 months of pregnancy. It's not so easy being pregnant. One of them is the blood of the period. One of them is covering the hair. She got 10 curses. The Torah calls it curses. The right way to say it is she got a tikkun, something to fix. She blemished, now she fixes. And Adam HaRishon, Bezat HaPecha Tuchal Lachem, you're going to have to work for your parnasa. Arura Adama Miayin Bata, the land is cursed. The land got cursed, that's why we got all the mosquitoes and the flies and the bugs and all these disgusting things. It's because the land is cursed. When Mashiach is going to come, we're not going to have all these annoying mosquitoes and flies and all these things. So since we understand in a very, what I gave you now is a very short overview, but we understand that we came here to fix a certain blemish that Adam HaRishon did. And up until today, we're fixing it. So, when the souls wanted to do something for Hashem, Hashem told them, I'm going to make you work. So when we come down here to work, when I'm saying work, I'm talking about following the rules of the Torah and the mitzvahs. And it's not necessarily the physical mitzvahs that I do, it's everything. Everything that has to do with Avodat Hashem, that's part of my service of God. So I literally came down to this world. A, I was hired to do a certain job. B, I came to fix the blemish that my father, Adam HaRishon, did, and I'm paying for that. Now, when this godly light exploded, it got trapped in something that is called klipa. It's a negative energy that surrounds the power of holiness and diminishes its light. We can't see it. Now, some of these sparks are very easy to elevate because they fell in all four levels of creation. The highest level of creation is man. Beneath it is animals. Beneath that is vegetation. And beneath that is inanimates. These are the four levels of creations. Domem, which is inanimates. Someach, vegetation. Chai is animals. And Medaber is humans. These are four different levels.
Humans.
Human beings.
It's the first.
Yeah, it's the highest. You can see the hierarchy.
Well, I see.
We have to elevate all four levels. That's why we have talking about human beings. We can elevate all four levels. If I take now water, I consume water, I'm taking an inanimate, it becomes part of me, I'm releasing the godly spark that is in it. If I said a bracha, and I said an after bracha, and it's kosher, and it's done the right way, I'm releasing the godly spark that's in the inanimate, taking it back to its source, and the psolet, the garbage, goes out. We say the first bracha when we eat something, it's to take out the godly light, to take out the spark. And when I say an after bracha, is to remove the psolet, the garbage. Unfortunately, in our generation, most religious people, they say the first bracha. They don't say it right, but they say the first bracha, and most people don't say the after bracha. They don't say Borei Nefeshot Rabot. They don't say Alam Michaya V'Kalkala. It's a more important bracha. The bracha is not to annoy us. The first bracha, She'akol Niyah Bidvaro, is to release the godly spark. It's trapped right now. I'm releasing it. Now I'm consuming it. Now I have energy. Now I learn Torah. I do mitzvot. I do what Hashem tells me to do. I'm elevating that spark. We touched a little bit yesterday that you elevate these sparks when you go to sleep, because your neshama during the day is in the body. When it goes to sleep, it takes all these sparks up. That's one of the many reasons why it's so important to say Kriyat Shema Lamita, because you have to release it and you have to take it up. That's one of the main reasons why we go up to Shamayim at night when we go to sleep. But the bracha achrona is to remove the psolet, the garbage, out, the spiritual garbage that is left. And if I don't do it, I contain it. We didn't talk about it in the class before. That's another one of the reasons that I'm holding spiritual waste in me. The bracha achrona is more important than the bracha rishona. And if you have to take something out of this class, is to start saying bracha achrona. And if you don't know it, I have cards here, I'll give it to you. It has all the brachot achronot. Borei Nefeshot Rabot, Ala Michaya V'Kalkala. You have to know it. You have to know when to say it. There's laws. So you open a Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, there are versions in English, and you learn the laws. When do you say which bracha, and how do you say it? How much you have to eat in order to say it? So there's laws, you learn it, takes you a couple minutes, you memorize it, and you apply it. But we are here to remove all these, remove is not the right word, maybe to extract these godly sparks and bring them back to their source. This is the sod etzadat, I'm sifting. This is kosher, this is not kosher. It's not kosher, I can't touch it. Why? The godly spark that's in it will damage myself. When the Torah comes and tells me, don't eat pork, don't eat shrimps, don't eat this, it's not to annoy me or to make my diet less options. It's to tell me the godly spark that enlivens this animal will make a short circuit with your spark, will make a damage. Take two minuses, makes an explosion. So the Torah came to instruct us, don't touch these animals. Don't mix these two things. There's a whole list in the Torah of things that we're not allowed to mix. It's called kil'ayim. You can mix wool and linen, shatnez. You can mix all sorts of things. There's a reason for that. It's two godly sparks that don't fit each other and you make a short circuit, an explosion. All the no's in the Torah, it's a very strong recommendation. Don't do it. Don't cross the red line. You're going to run into an accident. A red light. So the entire Avodat HaBirurim is sifting between the good and the bad. So when I take food, and first of all I sift it, okay, this is kosher, this is not kosher. Now I say the bracha. Now I consume it. Now I do my Avodat Hashem. I serve God in whatever way. Then I elevate the spark. So I'm basically doing my job in this world. That's what I was hired for. And it's in food, and it's in anything. Mainly in food, there are a lot of godly sparks in food. Now when I said before that you elevate all four levels, you can elevate inanimates, you drink water, you eat salt. You can elevate vegetation, you can elevate the animals. And sometimes you can consume an animal that ate vegetation that grew from the inanimate. Because I eat a cow that ate grass that grew because it was in soil and water. So I'm elevating all four levels of creation. Now some of these godly sparks are very easy to elevate. I just need to have a piece of fruit. And some of these godly sparks are hidden so deep that it's, first of all, I don't know to recognize where's the godly spark. And sometimes it's hidden so deep that it's not easy to take it out. There's a major rule in Kabbalah that says, "Mamala mala nofel mata mata." What comes from the highest source falls to the lowest place. Take a wall now, a wall of bricks. Push the wall. The bricks that are on the top will go flying far away. And the bricks that are on the bottom will only roll a little bit. This is the rule. What comes from the most highest place will fall to the lowest place. So the godly sparks that came from the most highest place in the spiritual realm, they fell down to this world in the most deepest places. And we have to come and pull them out. So the easiest ones are easy, but the deep ones are hard. And all these downs that we're going, not all, but the ones that we're concentrating about them today, is because I have to remove the spark. Now I correct myself, it's not all. I don't want to say in percentage, but just for the sake of the example, 50% of the hardships, the downs that we're going from, is our own actions. I do a certain action, right away I get a reaction. That's how it works in this world. I project energy into the world, the energy ripples back at me, an echo. I do good, good will come at me. I do bad, bad will come at me. This is it, cause and effect. So if I do something negative, I throw something negative into the universe, it will turn around and come back to me in some type of a form. So a lot of the problems that we're dealing is our own actions. But a lot of these problems that I'm dealing with, the downs, it's part of the system. And the system is, there's two ways to explain the system. One of them is that our life is a movie. It's a script. Hashem is the producer. He wrote the script. And you're hired as the actor. And everybody around you are the actors in the movie. And you have to go in the script. And the script is written. And in the script there are ups and downs. And that's part of the path. And we're going to get to that later. The other part of the system is that when I'm going on my path, part of these speed bumps, these downs, it's because here I have to stop to do something. It's almost like I'm going on a road trip. So I'm leaving from New York and I go all the way to Los Angeles. And on the way I have to stop. Some of the rides, a beautiful scenic route, and I'm enjoying it, and the kids are quiet in the back. And part of the ride, they're making noise, and they're screaming, and it's dark, and I can't see nothing. But it's part of the route that I have to go, and every place I have to stop and do something. So our entire life, we're going on this route, and I have to derive something out of this route. So you can kind of categorize it that there are three types of things that we have to deal with that are, we'll consider them as these down. One of them is my action. I do something and I get a reaction. The other one is that it's part of my route. And the third one is that I have to release these godly sparks that I found on the route. And the difference between the releasing of this godly spark and part of what I have to go on the route is two different things. Releasing the godly spark is sometimes Hashem will put a situation in my way, which is not a pleasant situation. We're not going to understand how it works, but in it is hidden a godly spark. This is what's called a nisayon, a test. Something happens. Something not so good, not so pleasant happens. And it's dressed, what is creating it, is a godly spark that is captured there. Now the Yetzer Hara is the master of wrapping his presence in a beautiful wrap. It's shiny, has ribbons, colors, and then you open it and it's all empty. This is the what the Yetzer Hara is master. But the present that Hashem gives you is wrapped horrible. Always wrapped with like newspaper and disgusting. And this is this nisayon, this test. Hashem puts you in a certain test, and He wants to see the reaction. And when you are able to overpower this test, basically what you're doing is you're getting a present that is wrapped horribly, so for you it looks like something bad, but really what's hidden inside of it is a gem. And Hashem says, if you just open the wrap, you'll find the gem. just we see it as a horrible gift and we throw it away. But really there's a gem in it. This is the nisayon, when something not pleasant happens in our life. And it can be a period of a day, it can be a period of 5 years. This thing that I have to deal with. It's just a nisayon. Hashem wants to see how you're reacting. If you're going to release the spark or not. This is one type of these downs. Another type of these downs, when I said that our life is a script, Hashem made it that our life is full of bumps, speed bumps. Now when there's no speed bump, then you're driving on a flat surface, no problem. But then there's a speed bump, you have to slow down, then you go up, you go down, it shakes the whole car. There's a concept that is called free choice, free will. Now people find it very hard to understand what's free will. If Hashem knows everything, then how is it free will? The free will is not if you're going to wake up in the morning and wear a black shirt or a green shirt. Or if you're going to have coffee or you're going to have tea. That's not free will. Free will is broken down into two levels. The first type of free will is that you're walking on this path and Hashem puts an opportunity in front of you. An opportunity to do a mitzvah. You now have the free choice if you're going to do the mitzvah or not. That's your free choice. He's going to put a person on your path that comes and tells you, I need help. Can you help me? I need help with money. I need help with a ride. Can you help me do this? He puts an opportunity. You have now the choice to say, sorry, I'm busy. And to miss the opportunity of grabbing a mitzvah. Or to say, sure. It's not convenient for me right now, but I'll help you. What do you need? Same thing with a sin. A sin, Hashem will put an opportunity for me, a sin, to do a sin. Temptation. Now you choose. Bechira chofshit, your free choice. To do the sin or not to do the sin. That's it. This is the simple explanation of free choice. Hashem is testing me. Why? That's a whole different thing. Now the real free choice is, and this is the main point of these downs, is that Hashem puts a situation in front of you. And now He wants to see how you react. And I'm talking about a bad situation. Good situations, it's easy to react. Although we also fail in the good tests. Because Hashem sometimes gives you an unbelievable opportunity. And most people don't take the second to look up to Shemayim and say, wow, you're unbelievable. Thank you so much. Right away our ego kicks in and says, no, I closed the deal. I found the house. I was able to manipulate the situation that my kid will get accepted to this school. No. Hashem made a miracle and you have to be grateful for that. So it can go both ways, but we're looking now, we're more concentrating on the negative part. Hashem puts a negative situation in your life and He wants to see how you're going to deal with it. If you're going to kvetch, you're going to whine, or if you're going to accept it. And the free will is that Hashem is going to put a bad thing in your life. Something. Doesn't matter right now what. Now the free will is if you are going to choose to accept that it came from Hashem or not. And that's your free choice. That's your free will. This is the test. If you are willing to accept that it came from Hashem, then you minimize the problem right on the spot. Because it came from Hashem. What can I do? Can I do something? And our sages teach us, you have to be grateful for the bad things exactly how you would be grateful for the good things. So the free will kicks in if I'm going to be accepting that it came from Hashem, or if I'm going to whine or complain. Why are you doing this to me? It's not fair. I'm such a good Jew. I'm doing everything that you're telling me. Now you're punishing me. I'm not punishing you. I just want to see how you're reacting. I want to see if you're going to be grateful. And saying, thank you Hashem, also for the bad. Okay, I understand. I know it's good for me. Nothing bad comes from Hashem. We translate it to be negative. Because it's just wrapped not nice. But the reality is that even the bad is good. We just don't see it right now. That's why Hashem tells you, be grateful. Because you're going to feel real bad the day that you're going to realize how good it is. And you want to kick yourself in your head for not being grateful at the time. That you could have said, thank you. That's why when you are thankful for the bad things, you elevate yourself to such a high level that you are willing to accept that everything came from Hashem. And you, when you reach to that level, you have no problems. The downs are no problems. They're part of the process. Now you have to separate between all three types. The ones that you are responsible for them, you just have to be aware enough and aligned enough to realize, hey, it's my problem, I did it. Don't complain. Instead of whining, why am I dealing with this thing? Be a man. You can't be a man, but be a mensch, saying, okay, I did it. I was wrong. I'll do tshuva. I'll go and apologize. I'll go give it back. Most people, they have an ego, and the ego tells them, no, it wasn't my fault. It was his fault. He did it. Like Adam HaRishon. You know what was the sin of Adam HaRishon? Not the eating of the fruit. The fact that he said, Aisha asher natata imadi, he amra li. She told me. That was his sin. Not the fact that he didn't listen to Hashem. That he complained that Chava made him do it. If he would tell him, listen, I did it. The whole situation would look different. So we blame people for our wrongdoing. That's the main part of the Avera. That I'm not willing to say, you're right. I didn't feel like it. I didn't want to. And you know who we blame all the time? We blame, I have a Yetzerara. We blame the Yetzerara. Don't blame your Yetzerara, blame yourself. No, I was lazy. I didn't feel like doing it. That's not black and white. It's not always that we are like that. After all, we're human. There's a reason why we fail a lot of the times. There's a very big reason why we fail. A lot of the times we fail because we weren't able to fight our Yetzerara. The desire was too strong and I failed. But a lot of the times that we fail is because Hashem wanted me to fail. And He gave the Yetzerara permission to overpower me. And if the Yetzerara wants, nothing that I'm going to do is going to work. He's going to be much stronger than me. And the reason why Hashem does it sometimes, that's also a nisayon. It's also a test. Because Hashem wants to see how I'm going to react when I'm on the ground. After I made the sin already. Hashem doesn't want to see how you fall. Hashem wants to see how you get up. That's why Rabbi Nachman says, "En yeush ba'olam." Because what is the Yetzerara? The Yetzerara comes and pushes you. And then you make a sin. You cheat, you lie, you steal, you say lashon hara, you do something. And then he comes and tells you, you loser. Look at you're a shmate. How dare you? You have the chutzpah to go and pray now. Yesterday you talked like this and like that. He makes you like that. He makes you feel like a complete loser. That's why Rabbi Nachman says, En yush bolam, why are you falling into despair? No, it's nothing. We read every Friday night in Kabbalat Shabbat, we sing the song Lecha Dodi. And the fourth verse in Lecha Dodi, it says, V'itna'ari me'afar kumi. The translation is, get up from the dust, brush it off. And the verse continues, V'livshi bigdei tif'artech ami. Wear the garments of glory of my nation. So Hashem sometimes pushes you down to the dirt, and He says, okay, now get up. Let's see if you're going to get up. And if you get up, and you do it, Nari, Mafar Kumi, brush off all the dirt, and you keep on going, then you won. You got a check. And if you stay down on the ground, then you lost. You lost the battle, because the Yetzirah was able to push you to the ground and make you feel like a shmate, and then you don't want to continue. So a lot of the times that we sin, it's bemet not our fault. It's a nisayon. You have to recognize when it happens. And you can recognize when it happens when you really couldn't, you really couldn't stand the desire to do something. You know, the whole point, the Zohar explains that one of the main reasons why we came down to this world is to do some type of emotion that is called itkafia. Itkafia means to subdue. Itkafia sitracha. You have to subdue the other side of holiness. And when you are able to do it, then the reaction is called hithapcha, transforming. Hithapcha chashocha lenohora, transforming the darkness into light. Umeriru lemetika, and the bitterness into sweet. So sometimes I have to deal with a certain situation. I have a desire to do something that is not permitted, and I fight my yetzerah. I fight it. I don't want to do it. Leave me alone. And I constantly fight it. This is the motion of itkafia. I'm subduing my desire. And when I'm able to do it, I crack it, and I transform the darkness into light. This is what the Zohar says. That this is our avodah in this world. Constantly, kadit kafya sitcha acha. Kol hazman, you fight it. Now, when you understand that this is your job, so you don't get affected. Okay, another nisayon, another issue, another headache, another this. It's my job. I was hired. You wake up in the morning. Okay, what's my job today? After I'm taking the kids to school, what's my job today? What's my sitcha acha today? What's my yetzerah? Somebody's going to come and start gossiping with me? No. What's, today I have a job. I have to subdue my yetzerah. So one needs to recognize where everything is coming from. The only way to recognize is it's only when you sanctify yourself. If you work on yourself to elevate yourself to a higher level, then you are sensitive enough to recognize where it's coming from. If you don't sanctify yourself, you're not going to recognize where it's coming from. You're going to be confused. You're going to have constant confusion. Is it true? Is it not true? Should I do this? Should I not do that? People are confused all the time because their soul is not balanced well. If you balance your soul well, then you don't have confusion. And one of the ways to sanctify yourself is, of course, needless to say, hold yourself from doing any sins, because that would bring the most impurity on you. Of course, one has to do mitzvot. But the way to really sanctify yourself is what's called lekadeshet atzmecha b'mutar lecha. Sanctify yourself with what you are permitted. And that means that you don't have to do something, but you still do it. You don't have to take something out of this world. The more you derive out of this world pleasures, you're putting some type of a thin layer of this dirt around your neshama. And lekadesh et atzmecha b'mutar lecha, sanctifying yourself with what you are permitted. There are numerous things, but I'll give you one example. You're allowed to eat. It's not a sin to eat. But it's only a mitzvah to eat on Shabbos. During the week, there's no mitzvah in there. And if you don't eat l'shem shamayim during the week, for the sake of the heavens, then your food is going to your teva, to your desire. L'shem shamayim means that I wake up in the morning, and I'm going to eat now breakfast, not because I want to eat this yummy food, because I want to have energy so I can go and pray now and learn Torah and educate my kids and take care of the house and do all my Avodat Hashem. I have energy. So I'm taking the food and I'm using it for Avodat Hashem. Then my eating is Hashem Shamayim. It's not for my own desire that I want this cake right now. And I want this chocolate right now. And I'm all day long, if I'm pleasuring things in this world, where is it going? It's going to fulfill my teava, my desire. It's not going to serve Hashem. On Shabbat,
Excuse me? Okay, to like enjoy life a little bit. Like, have some just taste buds so we can enjoy the different.
So use the taste bud from Shabbos.
So save the food that you love the most.
Exactly. Listen, I'm not telling you to eat dry bread all week. But a lot of people, they have all sorts of little, these little tavot. Okay, let me have this cookie. Only one cookie. Let me have this cake. Let me have this. And if there's no point of what you're eating right now, I'm not telling you again to suffer. Of course, this is also a different level of Avodat Hashem. If I want to really have a clear mind how to do my Avodat Hashem, then yes, I give up my little pleasures during the week because I sanctify myself. I don't bring on myself this dirt, this spiritual dirt, for it's not a sin. Nothing's bad going to happen. But I'm not sanctifying myself. So I'm not elevating myself to a level that I'm sensitive enough to see what's going on. And if I actually do this motion of itkafia, of subduing my desire on small things, Then when it comes to the big things, I do it for you. It's easy. So if I'm like, I love coffee. And when it comes to the third cup of coffee or the fourth cup of coffee, I don't really need it. One cup of coffee is enough. Second cup of coffee, fine. The third one, I don't really need it. If I do it kafia because I really want this third cup of coffee, what do I really need it for? It's not to for thirst. It's not for anything. I had already two cups. I know it sounds to you like very minor, but when I exercise the motion of it kafia, of subduing a desire that I have on something so small, when something big is going to come, I'm going to already be trained for the motion of the it kafia. More than that, what I did right now is I sanctify myself with something as it permitted. I don't have to eat this piece of cake right now. Let me enjoy the cake on Shabbat. That's a mitzvah. So in our house, we don't have treats during the week. Shabbat, that's the day for treats. So my kids, they get their ice cream, their lollipops, their candy. That's Shabbat. So for them, Shabbat is already 10 times more excited because that's the day of the treats. They don't get it every day. Hey, here and there, maybe a cookie, something, whatever. But some kids, I see them all day long, nushing. So forget about that it's not healthy. Forget about for the fact that you're getting them used to, even kids have to work on it, kafia. Kids have to have control. Kids in our generation have no control. When I was a little kid, and I used to get a candy, my mom would count. One for you, one for my sister, one for... Can I get two? No. Please, I want another one. Now in our generation, just gave me the bag. Kids don't have control. You don't give your kids one cookie or two cookies. They just take the pack and they eat whatever they want. And after 10 of them, you're like, come on!
Well, it's like how we used to ask our mothers if we could go into the pantry and take a snack.
My exactly.
Generation,
they don't.
Two generations of kids, the younger generations, the friends just think the pantry is a grocery store.
Yeah?
And it's like adjustment. My three older children would never just start.
So you want to make, you want to get it into the system of your kids that they also know to control themselves.
I don't know, because I always had a candy drawer, and all the kids used to zoom and eat out of the candy drawer because it was always there. My kid never went near it.
Each individual is different, but especially in our generation, I'm just talking about one thing, but one of the faults in our generation is that we don't have control over everything. Adults too. They don't have control. They don't have to control themselves.
So electronics. How do you create self-control for a world that we live in now where nothing's in, nobody, even the adults, can't control themselves?
Okay, so let me finish and then we'll do the...
Can I write it down for you?
The controls. So, I don't want to sidetrack too much, but in our generation, kids are, even adults, they don't have control. And you want to make your kids and yourself in the motion that you're able to control yourself and tell yourself, no. You can do that. My house is under control. There's rules. And you know what? When you break the rules, then the kids go wacko. They don't listen to you. They don't want to do what you tell them. Because there's no rules. And if there are rules, the rules are not bad rules. They're just rules. The problem in our generation is that the parents are constantly threatening everybody. If you do this, I'm going to do that. Kids don't react good for this, for the threats. It's not a good system. I don't know why people incorporate the threatening system. It doesn't work good. You can use it completely different. If you do this, I'll reward you here. That's a total different thing. Then threatening the kid that if you don't do this, I'll do this. I'll take your toy if you do like this and like that. And if you touch that, I'm not going to eat it. That's not the system. That system doesn't work. So the point is that not only kids, also adults, they don't have to have control. And when you work on your self-control, this it kafia, then you know how to even control your desires. So when a person wants to be more focused and more alert and more clear, and what Hashem wants from him is only when you sanctify yourself. So I gave one example with the food during the week, but it's with everything. Everything that you don't take any pleasure out of this world, it's not about that you, what, I'm going to not enjoy this world. I'm not telling you not to go on vacations and not to drive nice cars. That's not what I'm telling. Although, if you look at the great tzaddikim, that they raised themselves to such a high level is by totally segregating themselves from this world. Not taking nothing from the world. The great tzaddikim, they're like, I don't want nothing from this world. I don't want even one ounce of pleasure in this world. Why? Because they're in such a high level, they don't want nothing to be connected to the world, but that's how they reach their levels, that they're able to be in such a high level because they're not connected to the world. So this is a very high madriga. It's not for us. But the more you work on that, you're going to elevate yourself. The more you elevate yourself, the easier it is to deal with things because you see things clear. So one way of doing it is you work on your how you sanctify yourself. And you do one thing. So you do like what I said, instead of 4 cups of coffee, 3 cups of coffee. So you're not suffering because you took one less cup of coffee today. And this is one example out of many. You use your own imagination. You can, as long as you have control. If you lose control, then you're taking too much out of this world. Chas v'shalom, not to hurt anyone or to talk bad about anyone, but some women, they have to buy every 2 days a new dress. Why? Why? Once a month you buy a nice dress. Every day new shoes, these types of shoes, that type of shoes, I'm going to have 50 types of shoes. 5 types of shoes are not good enough. So it's out of control. So spoil yourself. Buy yourself beautiful clothes. But don't go crazy. So this is the problem, that we lose the control. Where am I stopping it? And when I work on this avodah of controlling myself, then it also manifests to how I'm controlling myself in this world, not to say the wrong word, when I feel like saying something. Because if I don't have control over my actions, I'm not going to have control over my talk. So I'm going to say all sorts of things that I don't really want to say. That if I would think about them, they wouldn't come out of my mouth. And then it's going to also go to a high level to controlling my thoughts. Then I'm going to start to be able to control my thoughts. I don't think bad about people. I don't judge people the wrong way. I don't think all sorts of weird things in my mind. So if I practice the motion of control of itkafia, then first of all, I elevate myself to a much higher level. But this is ultimately one of the things that we came to do down in this world. And I sidetracked to that because this is one of the ways how to elevate yourself to a level that when something bad happens to me, I can right away understand where it came from. I can know right on the spot if it came from my own action and I'm getting a reaction. Now let me look what I did so I can do tshuva. And I can recognize right away if it's a niseyon. And now you can be like, okay, it's a niseyon. Relax. And I can recognize right away if right now Hashem is giving me a present that is wrapped horribly and I just have to take it out. That's it. So if you want to deal with how I'm dealing with all these things, then first of all, you work on yourself. And one of the main things that one needs to work on himself is controlling their own ego. Because our ego is driving us. And everything that annoys us and affects us is our ego. And if something bad happens to me, instead of saying, you know, I deserve it. I wasn't so fair in that particular case. Oh, you know what? Hashem is testing me. And I'll let me humble myself to accept this test and do avodat Hashem. So right away my ego kicks in. I'm such a good Jew. Why is Hashem doing it to me? That's not fair. It's not fair. She does like this and like that, and she doesn't deal with this. This is my ego talking. Because I think that I'm so special that why am I deserving it? So when a person minimizes himself and controls his ego, then 50% of the problems are under control because I don't think that I'm so special. And I'm actually able to say, you know what, I was wrong. Not a lot of people are able to come to a situation and say, I was wrong. Very few people can come after an argument to their wife or to their husband and says, I'm sorry, I had a bad day. I should have controlled my words. I'm very sorry. I apologize to how I talked. How many people do it? Very few are able. And you know, husband and wife is a little bit easier. How many parents go to apologize to their kid when they snap at him for no reason? Almost nobody. How many times you snapped at your kid for no reason? They spilled something on the carpet or whatever. Something annoying you. You have your own issues. You snapped at the kid. The kid is like now shocked at this behavior. He runs up to his room crying. He doesn't even know what's going on. He doesn't know what hit him. And how many parents go up to the room and says, "I'm sorry. I'm going through something. I couldn't control my emotions. I'm very sorry. I apologize. You're right." Very few people apologize to the kids. And before you asked me about when I said that we don't know nothing to our kids, we don't owe nothing to our kids, and I said, remember?
It's a relationship. We have to give to them and give to us. I said, what are they to give to us? Like, what are they...
Sometimes, it's not about what they have to give to us, is us accepting the fact that there are also human beings in my home, and they're only in my home because Hashem gave me money to buy a home and to feed them. So I'm here in their merit. If Hashem gave me kids, I have to thank Hashem 50 times a day that He gave me kids, because a lot of people don't have kids. And it means that Hashem has trust in me, and He says, I'm putting my trust in you. I'm giving you my gems. You take care of them. So I don't owe my kids anything. I mean, they don't owe me anything. They do. They have to give me respect or whatever, but you know, you respect, you earn. You don't demand from your kids to respect you. You earn it.
Because the relationship
yeah.
has to be give and take.
It's a give and take.
What are they giving?
We're going to get to that soon because it's a little bit off the topic. But the point is, back to what I said, very few parents are true to themselves enough to go and apologize to the kid when it's time to apologize. And you try it once to apologize to your kid when you're wrong, and you'll see wonders how the kid suddenly completely changes. Now, kids don't hold grudge, but they remember. And you do something to the kid, they'll remember. And sometimes kids, you know, people tell me, why my kids are not listening to me. Yeah, because you scream at them all day long. And they don't listen to you because you treat them not nice. They're also human beings. They have feelings. So the point is that our ego stops us from achieving what we're supposed to achieve. So if I diminish my ego, then I'm willing to accept a lot of the problems that I did it. I did an action. Be a man. Accept it. Go and do tshuva. How many people, they're in their back of their mind, they know they're wrong. But they're not going to admit it. So when you want to start dealing with the things the right way first, you sanctify yourself to a level that you're able to see things better. Then you start working on your own ego, because half the things that you think are happening bad to you is just your ego telling you it shouldn't happen to me because I'm so good. Who says that you're so good? And a lot of times we complain to Hashem, I don't deserve it, I did this, I did that, I'm such a good Jew. Who says it's such a good Jew? You're saying you're such a good Jew. Maybe you're not. Maybe you're not a nice parent. Maybe you're not a nice partner. Maybe you're not a nice employee. Maybe you're doing a lot of bad things. Who said that? Why are you holding yourself as such a good person? So, chas v'shalom, I'm not telling you to put yourself down, but it has to be in the right perspective. The problem is that we get affected and we get annoyed by these downs because we think we deserve much more. But other than that, one needs to understand that when Hashem puts a test into me, He wants to see my reaction now. Now, if I'm going to fall down in my level and fall into despair and whine, and then I'm basically now taking this entire godly spark that I have to release and I'm taking it down with me. I'm doing the complete opposite of what I'm supposed to do. If I recognize that this is a nisayon from Hashem and Hashem wants to see how I'm reacting, and the more that I accept that it's coming from Hashem, and then more than I'm accepting it with a smile on my face, it starts vaporating and disappearing. Because it has no existence. It's a nisayon. It's nothing tangible. The more I feed it, then it becomes real. the more I ignore it. And I was like, okay, that's the reality, right? It's going to help right now if I'm going to whine or cry or complain. No. And a lot of the times, one needs to recognize that, yeah, Hashem is giving me now a present. This present is called a nisayon. And it's wrapped horrible. I just don't understand that it's a present. I just have to program my mind to come to the level to understand that Hashem gives me presents and they're not wrapped nice. And not always the present that I open it, not always I see right away that it's nice. I might see that it's nice 20 years later, and I might only see that it's nice, that it's a good present, only when I leave this world. And I can deal with something in my life that in my limited mind is a punishment. It's a bad thing that I have to deal with. And we'll pass 7 years and I'll go up to Gan Eden and they're going to tell me, look, the fact that you dealt with it your entire life, this is your reward now. That's part of the plan here. This is the script. This was your part of removing this godly spark. Now you can kind of recognize the differences when it's a nisayon that you have to overpower and when you have to extract a godly light, this godly spark from something bad. You can kind of see it. And the ones when you extract this godly light from, and it's when it's something short and hard. And when it's something long, like a long period, then this is where you actually are being tested right now. So if chas v'shalom, a person has a disease, chas v'shalom, or a very bad period in business. Business is real bad for a year or two. Or all sorts of legal issues, whatever. When it's too long, then you know this is a nisayon, I'm being tested right now. If I have patience, if I'm going to lose my temper, if I'm going to judge everybody, if I'm going to complain to everybody, that's a nisayon. But if something comes for a very short period, and I just deal with something, that's removing this spark. And sometimes you drive in the middle of nowhere, flat tire. And you curse the entire world. I'm late to my meeting, I lost this. No, it's one little thing. Just this is part of the nisayon. Part of this, just extracting this godly spark. It's something short and that's it, move on. Now we translate it to something very negative. Instead of understanding, wait a minute, oh, I just got sent a gig. I have to do something here to remove it and move on. So the point to understand is that everything that bad, so to say, happens to us, first of all, it's to refine us and to make us better. If it's something that I did and it's coming as a reaction, if I'm smart enough to recognize it, it comes to make me better because I can recognize something bad that I do or did. I do tshuva, and the next time I'm going to be a little bit more aware. So it came to refine me, to elevate me to a higher level. So even though it was a reaction of something bad that I started, I still gained an aliyah from it, a higher level. That's if you're taking it in the right proportion. Most people don't take it in the right proportion. But if you're focusing and you're saying, okay, fine, I'm human. I did a boo-boo. First of all, I can do tshuva. That's the most important. I can do tshuva. Second of all, now I elevated to myself to a level that next time that I'm going to have this opportunity, at least I'll be two cents more smarter to know to don't do it so fast. But when I have a nisayon that I have to deal with, all I need to do is just understand, okay, what's going on here? And once I understand that it's all coming from Hashem, and that I have to do something here, and could very much be that that's my part in the universe, and I have to right now fix one of these blemishes that was caused then, and that's what I was created for. And it's going to pass. The trick how to make it pass and how to deal with it is to accept it and to accept that it's coming from Hashem. And the more that you accept that it's coming from Hashem, the more you are knowing yourself that this is from Hashem, then you're making a space for Hashem to come in. If you not let Hashem come in, then Hashem says, I can't help you. You want me to perform a miracle? Make space for me. If you don't make space for me, I can't come in and intervene. And the way for you to make space to Hashem is to say, okay, I'm battle to you. Okay, I accept it from you. I'll go, it's hard for me, I'll put on a smile. I'll still do my avodat Hashem b'simcha. It's not going to take me away from my davening today or from my avodat Hashem. And the more you make space for Hashem to come in, Hashem comes in and suddenly disappears. Now, not always it disappears. Sometimes the nisayon is a long period. It's a year or two. Sometimes it's your whole life. Sometimes you have to deal with something throughout your life. And that's part of your path. And almost any person in this world has to deal with something in his life that it might be his entire life. Parents losing kids, chas v'shalom. Handicapped kids. All sorts of things that you have to deal with it for the rest of your life. That's one example out of many. But everybody has something to deal with. Everybody. And if they don't have to deal with this in this life, they dealt with it in a previous life. The Arizal says that we're all equal. We come back in generation in reincarnations, and at some point we all have the same thing. At some point in all our in reincarnations, we're all going to be rich. We're all going to be poor. We're all going to get divorced. We're all going to be everything. We all have to do everything. Why? So all the neshamot come to Shamayim and they say, you know, they can't say to Hashem, why did she get an easier life than me? If I would have an easy life like her, probably I would be like this and like that. So we're all equal. We're all getting the exact same test. Maybe not in the same life. But at some point, if I'm now dealing with poverty, it means that at some point in a different reincarnation, I was probably very rich. And to now, I'm rich and he's poor. Then it changes. He's rich, I'm poor. That's how this world works. So you can't look at a person and say it's not fair that they're not dealing with it. They dealt with it another time.
So whatever you have in this world, in the other worlds, or in a different life, you have the opposite?
Not necessarily the opposite. Rather, that if you take, and we make a whole list of things, so everybody at some point, when I'm saying one point, I'm saying one life will be rich. They'll have the nisayon of being rich. One life, you'll have the nisayon of being poor. One life, you'll have a nisayon of chas v'shalom losing a child.
We all come back?
All of us are reincarnations.
No, we all come back and get every one of those things you just said?
Yeah. If you take now all your lives and you put them together, they're all equal. We all have the same nisayonot.
Really? I thought we all have different jobs.
Yeah. Nisayon is a different thing than a job. Nisayon is a test. Job is a job. You have to separate the two things. Job is what I came to do in this world, what I came, my part in this world, to elevate to Hashem. That's my job.
Right, so why are we all in the same test?
So we're not going to go up to Shamayim and complain to Hashem, it's not fair that you gave me that test and you didn't give it to him. Because if you would give me the same test that he had, I would pass it better. So Hashem says, we're all getting the same tests. Don't try to understand too many things.
But you're trying to explain it. I'm not
getting it. Hashem wants to test you with something. So a person in this life, you look at a person, they're...
I understand that part, but if we're all created differently, and we all have different jobs and different tests, then how can everybody have gone through the same test?
In different lives. First of all,
we're all fixing this world. We're all here to fix this world.
Yeah, but we come in many different lives.
Last life you could have been a man. The life before you could have been, every life you're...
I'll give you an example. First of all, even in this life, you know, a person can be now extremely wealthy for 20 years. And people are looking at him, a person, his neighbor, he can't be his neighbor if he's wealthy. Another person that is poor looking at that person...